This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. Walk into Hot Topic at your local shopping mall and you'll see it clearly. Japanese anime has fully crossed over into American pop culture. A big part of this success is owed to the availability of English language dubbed anime series like One Piece, Naruto, and Dandadan. Along with that access, though, there is also the improvement and, personally speaking here, the vast improvement in voice acting for English dubbed shows. Robbie Damon is a St. Louis area native whose talents are part of that upward trajectory. And he joins us today to share how he brings literal scores of animated characters to life on shows that range from Spider-Man on Disney Plus to Jujutsu Kaisen and Demon Slayer on Netflix. Robbie, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Wow, you have a nice voice. I'm glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So, Robbie, let's talk about your credits list. So on IMDb, sure. I mean, it goes on for a very long time. There's some scrolling.
I like to think that it's not just quantity, it's also quality.
Yes.
But your intro is very flattering. I appreciate it. I've done probably about, on IMDb, you'll see around 400 plus credits. Not credits.
A cool 400.
about shows. So within those shows, I may voice multiple characters. So I would say I probably voiced, upwards of 1,000 characters over my 15-year career.
Mm-hmm. Now, within our newsroom, alone, folks know your voice acting in animated shows from across the world.
You've got real live nerds back there?
Oh, we do.
Oh, I can see them through the glass.
I mean, this place is just, yes, popping at the seam with nerds. And those shows, they include Marvel, Spider-Man, the web series Critical Role.
That's true.
And then your voice acting can also be heard in video games like Fire Emblem and Cyberpunk. So you mentioned 15 years. I mean, that is a long time to be doing something. What is it that you find most fulfilling about voicing so many different characters in sort of this many genres?
Yeah, I'm in town for the Missouri Thespian State Conference, which is happening down the street. And this was actually the topic of the keynote speech I was doing there, which is, for me, it is just... And I know this, I don't want this to sound too much of an exaltation of what we do, but it really is about the audience for me. So what I do in my Monday through Thursday is very much isolated. I'm in a booth with a handful of a very talented crew. So I'm by myself a lot. And on the weekends, I go to Comic-Cons around the world and I get to meet the fans, which... as an ex-theater kid, is the fundamental relationship that I find so fulfilling about a lifetime as a performer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Was there a certain point at which people started recognizing you? Like you mentioned the voice.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, I call it con famous. It's nice. When you go to these conventions, you'll go to the best hotel in town and usually downtown, and you'll go to the convention center, and a lot of people will see you. So you get this fun little taste of like being a quote-unquote celebrity. Mm-hmm. But then I did this show called Critical Role, and I had done some on-camera stuff in the past, but nothing to that level. And it has such a huge, wide fan base, and it is my face. So now I think I would say since about 2020, I don't really go anywhere without, at least having one critter, that's what they call their fans,
come
up and say hi.
Yeah.
And I'm totally okay with it. They're, mm-hmm. they're respectful, they're kind. I'm always glad to take a picture. So, never feel bad about tapping me on the shoulder.
Right.
I'm glad to see people out there enjoying it.
And Critical Role is... Mm-hmm. It's a Dungeons and Dragons. Yeah, tell us about
arguably
that.
The Dungeons and Dragons live play show. Yeah,
okay.
It started off 10 years ago. They're having their 10-year anniversary. And their catchphrase at the time was nerdy-ass voice actors playing D&D. So they're all also voice actors as well. And they started doing what's called now its own genre, which is a live play,
right.
Where you play a TTRPG, a tabletop RPG, just like you would Dungeons and Dragons, but you live stream it. And they have viewership in the millions, millions, millions. They sell out. We just did a live show, sold out at the Greek. Like, it's a really wild thing that they've really helped launch. And now you can watch hundreds of D&D live plays anytime you want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, your acting work in anime, mm-hmm. mentioned in the introduction.
Sure.
that I feel like there has been a vast improvement. And in my opinion, right, English voice acting in anime was not very good like 20 years ago. I'm putting it diplomatically. Like
you're doing great.
Would avoid things that were dubbed.
Yeah.
And producer Maya Norfleet, she's been watching anime since she was a kid. Mm-hmm. She and I have talked a lot about contemporary voice acting and how it has gotten so much better. It's more reliable. It's less corny.
Yeah.
What do you think accounts for that? And for you personally, is there some translation work that you're doing as you are playing a Japanese mm-hmm. character? Mm-hmm. But voicing in English?
Yeah, it's a great question. Listen, and I don't want to say this by, I don't want to offend any of my predecessors. I think those were wild times where, you know, there were a lot of people just cutting their teeth, figuring out how to bring localization to the States in the 90s. And, you know, that said, if there's a perceived increase of quality, I think it would be because we've had more time in the media now. So the anime that we're doing now, we realize that there are some shows that do better in the States than they do in Japan, viewership-wise. So for me, it's just someone who grew up with that 90s stuff, and I really enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And I started out as a classically trained actor, and I was doing cartoons and commercials and more Western voiceover for a good 7 years before I ever did anime. And then I went to a show called Anime Expo. It's a big convention in Los Angeles.
Right, right.
It was 2013. And I was looking around, and I was just like, wow. It was 50,000 people at the time. For perspective, now it's about 130,000 who attend that show.
Oh, wow.
But I was really looking around going, wow, there's really a potential for a mainstream appeal here. I was like, I feel like this would be a good thing for me to pursue. So I reached out to a studio owner who I had worked on Disney stuff with, mm-hmm. whose studio happened to dub anime. And I said, hey, Jamie, man, you got any anime? And he's like, you want to audition for anime? Because the pathway, I think your perception is the general perception is that it's low rent work. And I said, yeah, I want to do it. And that very first audition was Tuxedo Mask and Sailor Moon. We were rebooting the show and then redubbing the original in all the films. And the very next year, I was on the main stage at Anime Expo being mm-hmm. introduced as Tuxedo Mask. And that was my first anime almost exactly 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So I believe that quality increase is for a couple of reasons. Now you've got some younger people coming up where anime has been popular for a long time, and there's really good actors who just want to do it. Or you've got someone, me, who's not quite old guard, sort of mid guard, who brought their skills from other areas in the acting world and love anime. And honestly, there's a handful of us who's like, it's our mission to squash the dub haters. I want to see a discourse online where an OG like subs never dubs person comes in and is like, boo, you watch in English, and then watch them get mobbed by people who actually watch in English and go, I like this performance better, or I think it's equal but different. I'll always be happy with that. Anything where I don't have to put down my fellow actor. So I think there are a lot of us out here now where maybe 25 years ago it was just a job, now who are going in there with a level of passion and love for the medium that translates into quote unquote more consistent performances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Clearly, you've thought about this a lot.
I've thought about it a lot.
Right.
This is public radio. I'm ready to give an astute answer, if so asked. Oh,
well, and perhaps some astute renditions here. Let's play a little game here, Robbie. And I'm
going
to call this Do the Voice. So one of the characters that you voice is Peter Parker, Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. And this is from the Disney Plus animated series, mm-hmm. Marvel Spider-Man.
Yeah.
So this is why don't you tell us the character or sort of the voicing profile?
Yeah,
and
sure.
Then give us a few lines.
Yeah. Well, this was an interesting experience. I was on my way home from a busy double day of voiceover sessions, and I got a phone call, and they said, do you want to come in and be or do this audition. And I was like, not really, but I will. It was the last audition of the day because someone dropped out. And I went in and did it and booked it. And that was Spider-Man. And I had very little information. I didn't know it was Spider-Man. It was codenamed.
Oh.
So I basically look at the sides. I do a regular old actor's interpretation of what I'm reading. If there's a breakdown of what the character's like, I take that into account. And for a character like Peter Parker, for this show, he was 15. So this is my normal speaking voice, which I'm, you know, kind of a tenor, whatever. So I just sort of climb it up in my voice and make him younger and brighter and happier. And he's kind of goofy and he's a cut up and he's got a voice. And then all of a sudden, then they were like, oh, wait, he's nerdy too. We're going to do this version where he's at a science high school. And they're like, yeah. So I just put a little more forward in my voice. And all of a sudden it turned into Uncle Ben. No, just me, your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. And I still do that whenever Tom Holland doesn't want to come in. I do it for all of the, like the Disney stuff that's live, a bunch right. of the theme parks and stuff.
And yeah. We've got people clapping in the in the air control right now hearing
sure,
this.
Sure, sure.
Let's move on to another one. And this is from a Japanese anime. This is Hotaru Haga Nezuka.
Yeah.
Hotaru Haganezuka.
It's a tough one.
Anglicized. This is from the anime Demon Slayer.
Yeah.
So this is someone who is self-inflated.
Sure.
Has a bit of an ego. Mm-hmm. Swordsmith.
Yes.
And he's got quite the temper.
Yeah. So this is one of those sessions that it's a comedy, which is my passion. But so I love the character, but always hate the sessions because I end up blowing out my voice.
Okay.
So if you got someone rocking the gain back there, this could be painful. He's a real intense guy. He's got a, in the Japanese, he's got a very deep voice. I think it's an even older actor. So his voice is way down here. So when he's serious about something, he goes, Tanjiro Kamado, I have crafted your sword. But then, like, when he's silly, my favorite line of his that I recorded is, what do you mean? I'm not old! I'm 37 years old! And it was funny because I was 37 when I recorded that. So
okay.
The pain was real. But yeah, it's a goofy, screamy kind of character. It was a lot of fun.
Uh-huh. We're talking with Robbie Damond. He is a St. Louis area native and voice actor behind hundreds of characters in animated films, television, and video games. And we are in the midst of a game called Do the Voice. So another voice that you have done, another character that you have played or maybe contributed to creating with your voice
sure.
is Hubert von Vestra from the video game Fire Emblem.
Yeah.
What descriptors would you use for this character and how you approach the voicing we're going to hear?
Yeah, this one's interesting because if I recall, I don't think I auditioned for this. I think this was an offer from a studio that I work with, which happens on occasion. And Hubert is the right-hand man of Lady Edelgard, who could become the empress of this land. And his defining traits is he's fiercely loyal. He is morally ambivalent. It does not matter. He'll do whatever he needs to for Lady Edelgard. And he's got sort of a sly, hyper-intelligent voice. And so we wanted to give him an edge of aristocratic air, but not go full British. So he's deep down in his voice. And when he talks to Lady Edelgard, he's very private and he consults with her. But then when he talks with somebody who he thinks is lesser, he's just dry and biting. And all he ever says is that he will crush you. He says lines like, we will burn together. But he also says lines like, for her majesty. So it's a fun character. How do you make this creep who is also somewhat redeemable? Yeah, he has a pretty interesting storyline.
Now, we're going to end this with a character from the anime Jujutsu Kaisen.
Sure.
And this is Megumi Fushiguro.
Mm-hmm.
Megumi.
Mm-hmm.
What do we need to know about this character before we hear you?
You guys picked a lot of like grumps.
Oh.
I play a lot of like kind of like fun sort of happy-go-lucky characters, but I'm enjoying your company, but I'll glad to stay grumpy with you. Megumi is a stone-cold grump. He's not very expressive, which is a really fun acting challenge. Especially in anime when there's a lot of character archetypes that are repetitive. a lot of times these big performances are rewarded, right? Everybody wants to see Goku go Kameha. They want to hear him yell. But I think the subtle work can be a lot harder because without a face to convey an emotion, and it's just a drawing, how do you show that a character is someone feeling something just through their voice? So even though Megumi is very quiet and soft-spoken, he can be sarcastic. He can be a little bit mean to his friends. He does care about them deeply. So he'll say things that are like contradictory. Like one of his famous lines is one of the leads just died and came back to death. And he says, "Glad to have you back. If you die again, I'll kill you myself." So it's like one of those things where it's like, oh, I guess that was a nice thing to say. But one of my favorite scenes in season one is when he unleashes his big attack, his domain expansion. And that one, he sort of loses it. And you see the simmering angst beneath. And he goes fully. So he just goes, domain expansion, Chimera Shadow Garden. And then he just sort of crushes everybody. It's the best. So you use what's on the page, as any actor does. If you've got a good team behind you, if you've got a good director and a good producer, they're going to guide you in the right direction. And then in terms of anime, you're always going to have the picture beforehand and the Japanese performance to use as a launching pad for what you're going to do. We will preview in Japanese and then we'll watch in English. Or then we'll perform in English. So it can be a different experience in that way.
Well, and before we leave this game, you said that we've chosen characters who have a darker inclination.
Sure.
Is there a character we've not talked about that you do consider to be a reflection of sort of the brighter side of things?
Yeah. Well, I am. Unfortunately, I am that kind of guy. I wouldn't say I'm toxically positive, but I am. That is my default mode.
Okay.
Yeah, I have a couple of characters. Like, if you shave off like 30 IQ points, you could say Chai from Hi-Fi Rush. Like, I love the lovable idiot archetype. It's my favorite. And he just kind of bounces around. He just wants to be a cool guy to hang out. He's like, I'm a future rock star. He's very, very sweet. But I think the closest to me would be a character named Prompto from Final Fantasy 15. He plays one of the main companions of the main character, who's a grump. And he's, even though he's suffering from imposter syndrome and all these other things within the group, he's got like a nice, deep, dark storyline. He just always finds a way to like brighten those moments. So the trick was not to play that character as just the comedy relief. Give him the motivations that allow him to be both a good character and a great comedian. So he'll do stuff like, you know, sing the chocobo theme. He'll go, "I want to ride my chocobo all day," while they're riding around. Everybody's like, "Shut up." Or he'll just say to Nacht at the end, during the game, he's just like, "I'm ever at your side." And you can do something small like that and be goofy. And hopefully that gives someone in a game that takes, you know, 80 hours to play, a real experience of a person instead of just playing these archetypes. And that might speak to your opening thesis about the quality of a performance. I think now we are so much more cognizant of the impact that these games and anime and cartoons have on young people. I just want to give them the highest level of performance that I'm capable of. So even if I'm going in and doing something that's not necessarily my personal favorite, I'm always going to try to like literally bring my A game so I can give them the best I can.
Well, speaking of your game,
okay,
and where you've been, sure, you talked about what has brought you to town, which is this thespians event, right?
Yeah.
So you are formally trained in theater, stage acting. You started here at Webster University and then went to UNLV.
I've been to all of the universities.
So
I went to Francis L. High School, which is the Missouri State, which is the thespian troupe, which is in St. Charles. And then I dual enrolled for my last year. So I only went to high school for like, I did the morning announcements. I would go do the morning announcements and do like two classes. And then I would go to Lindenwood. So that's where I did my first few college plays.
I
did my first professional play when I was 10. So then I went to Webster for a couple of years and it just wasn't the school for me. And then I went to UNLV. They took all my credits. I transferred and I went there specifically because they had a really high level 3-year MFA program that they only accepted a class every 3 years. And it happened to be the year that I was meant to graduate.
Oh, right.
So I rolled straight into undergrad to grad school and ended up being a PTI, and I was allowed to teach the undergraduate theater majors.
Okay, part-time instructor.
Part-time instructor. Okay. Very good. Yeah. And I taught for another semester after that. And then when I went to LA, I taught for about a year and a half at the New York Film Academy at their MFA program.
Okay.
Yeah. So I, yes, I have a theater background. Correct.
Right. Well, being in so many different places, having exposure to and relationships with people who are from so many different parts of the world, has that informed the way that you approach the voice acting and in particular doing characters versus caricature?
Oh, yeah, 100%. So, you know, I do all these voices. I mentioned my Monday through Thursday. That's when I'm in LA, where I've lived for the past 18 years. It's where I'm raising a family. I have a beautiful wife and kids. I'm a family man. But I do travel a lot on the weekends. And I do these conventions. So I meet face to face anywhere between like 300 and 500 people a weekend. I'll shake their hands. I'll hear their stories. I'll talk. And then I'll do panels for a couple thousand people. And I do 25 to 30 of those a year. Mm-hmm. And I've been doing that for 10 years. So I meet a lot of people. And then I go out into the city and experience the culture wherever I'm at, if it's somewhere that I want to be. And it is, meeting people is the single most informative piece of work you can do outside of straight up script analysis. Mm-hmm. Like, meeting people is the best. So we're in addition to this, we're making a video game right now. So I have a video game company. It's called Sassy Chap Games. I own it with three of my buddies, and we're doing a full game. It's really silly. It's called Date Everything. It's this wild game. You can look it up online. We had a huge announcement. It went really well. We release on February 14th. But in this game, there are 100 different characters, all with different voice actors. It's 1.6 million words, 700,000 voice cues. It's a massive game. But we ran into this thing where we're like, how do we make 100 different characters in the writing process? And the answer was hiring 30 writers, but also making sure that themes and tropes and archetypes didn't overlap. And guess what? It wasn't that hard. Because people are people. So if you get stuck in this place where you're just trying to play a type, I think you're always going to find that playing a person is going to serve you better for both the audience and you as an actor in your creative process.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How did your time growing up here, I mean, has that shown up in ways that you noticed perhaps after the fact?
Probably just the stuff that made me a weird little kid. I mean, there's no surprise that the kid talking to himself all the time was a voice actor. So. No, I have a really wonderful, supportive family. My mother is a college professor, doctor, mom, PhD. She's educated and kind and empathetic and really talented herself. And she really always fostered my theatrical stuff growing up. But she was, you know, mostly a single mom until I was about 8. And then my stepdad came into my life.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the best in the world. Just like such a great guy. They were all on the same page. He's like a hardworking, totally like different kind of man that I'd ever been around in my life. And the two of them were the ones who raised me along with my grandparents helping a little bit here in Missouri. And my time here is incredibly informative. It was the 80s and 90s. You know, there's not really internet quite yet. So you had to entertain yourself. And we were always our family functions. We had music and skits and all of those things. And I think it's so important for family bonding. And then if you want to create a creative child, you have to foster those things when they're young. And, you know, I'm not trying to preach to other parents. I would never deign to do that. But, you know, those kind of things. A bored kid is a creative kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a bunch of land to explore. We were way rural when I first grew up. I was out in Warrenton. We had hundreds of acres to run around and fish and play and all that stuff. And yeah, I just had the most overactive imagination. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And in our last minute here,
sure,
for those who are thinking about pursuing some of the kind of work that you're doing because they've enjoyed the quality
sure.
of the voice acting and these animations, What is the one thing that you think they should do?
Yeah, I always say the same thing. If it's a VA for voice actor, it's little V, big A, right? Get some acting training, even if you have no interest in doing theater or on camera, anything like that. Those skills are fundamental and will translate. If you don't know how to break down a piece of text or make critical choices or play an action as an actor, you're just going to get stuck behind the microphone doing a poor imitation of what you think it's supposed to sound like. Mm-hmm. So that's always my suggestion. Get some traditional acting training first, and then you can work on the specialization of what it is to be a voice actor.
Yeah. Robbie Damon is a voice actor with roots in the St. Louis area and credits on a very long list of anime and animation series. Robbie, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, I'm so happy to be in St. Louis. Thanks, guys.
You can meet Robbie at the Wizard's Wagon on Del Mar this Saturday, January 11th from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m.
This episode was produced by Maya Norfleet.
Our audio engineer is Aaron Doerr. This podcast was mixed and edited by Aaron.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.